Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time again, another episode of Sports Card Live. We take a magnifying glass to the sports card industry, news, reviews, thoughts, the occasional tangents, and free stuff. Hosted by Dan Rage, Ryan, and Doug Fresh. Boom!
Am I going to remember how to do this? Pack Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. It's been a while. We got a lot to talk about, so we're going to pack you with information for about 2 hours. We're going to be joined by Sergio from sportscardalbum.com, and he's actually kind of going to almost take over as host for tonight because he attended more of the meetings at the industry summit, and that's what's going to be the topic of today's show, kind of reviewing and, you know, giving you guys some of our thoughts on some of the news that came out of the 2014 industry summit. So it'll be a kind of a fun show. We'll have a little giveaway to give away at some point during the show. So listen in for that when we cue you in to call. It's probably going to have something to do with creating a sports card album account. So if you guys, you know, should get that ready right now while you're listening. So what's going on, Dan? How you doing? How's it feel to be back from Vegas?
Oh, feels good. I love the intro. Was that planned? Were you not sure if you were rolling yet? You're just like, I don't know if I know how to do this still. That was, like, better than when I was in Vegas, and I did the show in Vegas, I was, like, super sick. So I was, like, it started going live, and I was, like, hacking my head off. And I think that was our intro. It was just me coughing, like,
I wrote
our intro.
Well, see, I planned that out. I said, am I going to remember how to do this? I actually wrote it down. So I just, you know, I actually planned that part out. Yeah, exactly. It was actually an attempt at humor. I just, you know, I think I was the only one that was laughing inside. But anyways, Ryan, what's going on? What's new with you, man?
Not much, dude. Just hanging out, watching baseball. And that's about it.
What topic of baseball, what prospect do you like so far? What have you seen from spring training? I haven't really caught much of it this year.
Let's see if I saw any prospects. I don't know if I saw any prospects that I like. I'm more into basketball prospects right now, couple that I like. But with baseball-wise, I mean, I saw Michael Choice hit a home run the other night for the Rangers against might have been against the A's. So, you know, so still rooting for Michael Choice. So I'll go with Michael Choice right now.
Yeah, I got a few good stars as well.
How about that kid Javier Baez? Like, a lot of people have been talking big about
him. Oh, he's good,
about
too.
Him.
Yeah.
The Cubs are...
That guy's really good.
The Cubs are coming up. Maybe the year. I know they're probably three years away from being 3 years away, but, you know.
Showtime! Yeah, they might be there.
That was Gary Payton in the draft.
That was, yeah. No, he's actually on the chat. That wasn't even a snippet. That's really Gary Payton. He's here with me. I'll go ahead and bring on Sergio here from sportscardalbum.com. What's going on, Sergio?
Buddy, how are you guys doing?
Doing great, hey. Man.
So which one of you is the one that got me sick at the summit?
I'm going to blame it on Doug.
Okay. I was blaming it on the airplane, but by the last day or so there, I was just dying and ended up just being out of commission for the rest of the week. So forgive me if my voice has yet to catch up with me.
No worries. It's that dry desert heat, you know. I don't think any of us are used to being in that area. So I think we all kind of come away with But they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but it doesn't really because you always bring something back in form of a health concern.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. No, I was relegated to the spare bedroom and wasn't even allowed to see my wife or baby for the first couple of days because it's just like you are not getting us sick.
Oh, man. Man. Well, let's kick off the show. And you know, your guys' app has came out, and I was just playing around with it. It's freaking awesome. Why don't you kind of tell everybody about Sports Card Album if they haven't heard about it? Tell them what it is, and tell us a little bit about the app and some of the stuff that's coming up for you guys.
Sure. And the app's going to be a whole lot more awesome in about 2 weeks when we release the first update. But essentially, the entire idea, Sports Card Album, is a photo management site made just for card collectors. So, you know, I know a lot of the listeners are probably already on it, but it's an alternative to the Photo Bucket or Flickr or Imgur or all those different places that are made for you to, you know, for girls to do duck face and take sepia tone pictures of their food and all that stuff. So Sports Card Album is photo management just for card collectors, and it allows you from the very beginning to take a picture with your phone of a card, you know, at a card shop, add the details of the card, and when you get home, it's instantly beautiful. It's already ready waiting for you on your computer, nicely organized. But at the same time, as soon as you take a picture with your phone, you've got an image code that you can share on the forums in case you do any buying, selling, trading on any of the forums online. So the website's been out for, you know, almost a year now. We've had a mobile version the entire time that works for everything, but the vast majority of our users are on Apple iOS. So we've been working really hard for the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 months developing the Apple app, which launched last week, actually. I guess a week and a half ago now, right before the industry summit. So 2 days before the industry summit, it launched. And it's gone over really well. We've got some great reviews. Several hundred copies have been downloaded. I think we're near 300 copies, and all the proceeds are going towards the development of the Android app, which should be coming out here hopefully in the next month and a half. Androids take a lot more time to develop, strictly because you have to test them on 100 different, you know, versions of a phone, whereas Apple, you have three phones, you know, iPhone 4, 5, and 5S, 5C, whatever. But essentially, you've only got a couple different phones to test it on. Android, you got a lot. So right now on the app, you can take pictures. You can follow your friends. There's a beautiful live feed. You can see people's profile, comment on cards, like cards, tweet out cards, or anything like that. The most popular thing is just scrolling through the live feed of cards or filtering it by your favorite sport and just seeing the latest cards that pop up. But within in the next 2 weeks, we're already developing the abilities to be able to create your own albums, edit the card details, delete cards, and a couple other aesthetic updates that are going to make it a complete standalone experience. So within 2 weeks, if you want to just do all of your sports card album on your phone, you pretty much can. So it's going to be pretty darn cool. And then we're working on the iPad and Android apps concurrently. So those things are already in development.
Sweet. Yeah, that's exciting stuff. And, you know, we got an account on there. We're actually going to be posting more of our hits on Sports Card Album. And we're actually talking about possibly getting some kind of trading night together using Sports Card Album. So possibly look forward to that in the future. You know, we're really excited about the format. And, you know, the industry definitely needed something other than Photo Bucket. Like you said, just too watered down on Photo Bucket. So this is strictly for the collector, which is awesome.
Thank you. I agree.
So,
I agree.
Well, good stuff. Yeah, we'll be doing a giveaway as long as you guys have a Sports Card Album account. Whoever calls in, we'll prompt you guys for that later in the show. But wanted to kick it off right with some 2014 Industry Summit talk. So I don't know where you guys want to begin. You guys want to begin with Panini or throw some topics out there? We'll get right into it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that went down. So there were specific meetings, private meetings for brick-and-mortar card shop owners. There were private meetings for group breakers that I know you attended. And then there were several meetings where retailers and anyone present could pose questions to the industry executives, the leaders from Panini and Topps and Upper Deck. And then we had the separate sections, which were the big Panini's big reveal, their big auditorium session. Upper Deck had a big luncheon that they sponsored, and we had a lot of different events. So a lot of stuff came up. If you guys want to start with Panini, we can.
Well, you know, actually, I was just thinking, why don't we get your opinion before we divulge into the different topics? What was your overall takeaway from the event, if you could sum it up in a few sentences?
I thought it was phenomenal. I really thought it was a great event. The access to industry leaders was remarkable because, you know, I've been to the National, and at the National, I'm over there and I want to talk with, you know, Tracy or Clay or, you know, from Topps or Chris from Upper Deck. and it's difficult, and you've got hundreds and hundreds and thousands of collectors trying to get a second of their time to ask them about redemptions from like 10 years ago, or, you know, why number 74 from the set in 1988 Tops wasn't, you know, why they can't find that or something, you know, a bunch of crap like that. And here, you've got a ton of time, one-on-one. It's very limited. There's only a couple hundred brick-and-mortar shops from around the country, you know, the leading group breakers from around the country, and a small number of other companies related to the industry. So it was very easy to talk with anyone you wanted, to schedule some time to actually sit down and talk for half an hour or things like that. And I think everybody came with the idea in their minds that they wanted to ask questions or get answers, and the manufacturers came pretty prepared to answer most of those, or at least attempt to answer most of the issues. So I thought it was a really nice format that allowed people to really vent their issues and ask questions in a straightforward, direct manner to the leaders rather than to their social media people or through emails or through the phone. You know, we got to get a lot of answers directly from the people that make the decisions.
Nice. Yeah, I agree. Definitely. It definitely seemed like a different vibe this year. It seemed like the, you know, we got to see some progress, and hopefully there is. That kind of segue us right into Panini. Panini had their big auditorium thing with the corporate address, and the topic was redemptions, like it is every year. And they introduced this new rewards program, which, you know, I think most of the industry seems to like the idea. There's a few people that are complaining, but that's just part of the people on the message boards anyway. But, you know, I think it's a good thing. Just to kind of sum it up for you guys that don't know, instead of having a redemption card for a certain player, they're going to insert these redemption points that can be kind of put into Panini's store, and you can redeem them for a certain kind of card. So we'll have to see how it turns out when they start unveiling them in new products. But instead of waiting 8 months, you can get something within a couple days. So kind of eliminates that, you know, they got you for 8 months on a certain card that you're waiting on. So, you know, I think it's definitely going to be a good thing. I want to kind of see it in more in play, how it's going to turn out for group breakers and what it's, if it's not going to eliminate some of the bigger autographs that were redemptions, which they said it wasn't, right? I mean, they said it wasn't going to really replace any of the big autographs. Is that correct?
Right. They did mention, you know, folks like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, referencing basketball. Those are still going to be redemptions. I know one objection that some people stated immediately on Twitter was, wait a minute, if I pulled a Kevin Durant, I want my Kevin Durant. I don't want some other jerk saving up a bunch of, you know, Mike Gillisley autos or whatever, and saving up a bunch of redemption points and then taking my Kevin Durant. And so Panini did state that the big hits, which is always, you know, you're going to get into arguments about what's considered a big hit and who's considered the top players. But the big names are going to remain redemption. So if you pull that guy, you're still going to wait for that person.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Ryan, looking from the, you know, reading some of the stuff, what do you think about the reward system? Or Dan, one of you guys?
It definitely sounds like a step in the – it sounds like a – sorry, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, no. Go ahead. You got it.
Or I mean, it sounds like a step in the right direction. You know, it definitely sounds like a step in the right direction. I'll probably wait to see how they're going to pull it off. I don't know if, you know, Panini's pretty good at getting mirrors kind of show at the summit. How they actually execute it, I think, will be a different story altogether if they're able to sustain it. You know, some of their other kind of pushes into different things really have been very hit or miss. The HRX video cards, the adrenaline game, you know, some of the things to do. But overall, their customer service appears to be pretty good or better than some of their competitors. So,
yeah,
you know, why not give this a shot and see what happens?
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, what's your take?
Well, it's hard for me to really have an opinion on it until I see what the final product is going to bring. So what's going to be the value, or what a value are they going to assign to these certain redemptions? And what are you going to be able to...
That's one of the big questions, sure.
And what are you going to basically be able to get for these redemptions? I mean, and are they going to do something like they did with the Panini Pylon, where they made an all-one-of-one set and didn't include it into the product, but included it directly through their website? Are they going to produce more cards and leave those for the redemption so you can go ahead and get, like, a Russell Wilson? Or I like the idea of being able to pick whoever you want. I think from a collector's standpoint, that's a great idea. But what are you really going to be able to pick? I just want to see the final product and what are your options really going to be before I can actually make an opinion of it. For a group breaker standpoint, it's going to take a little bit of thinking and how we're going to be able to break it down, but we'll be able to figure that out. It's just going to
well,
take,
and this is actually they did an interview on Beckett.com, just to not plagiarize them here. They asked the question, if Andrew Luck doesn't sign his card and reward points get seeded into the product, is the one card worth what an Andrew Luck auto would be in the reward inventory system? And the answer, and this is from Mark Warsup, is the points on the card are what we believe is the value missing from the card that it represents. So it sounds like if Joe Montana, Andrew Luck, they don't sign, then those points are going to be based on the value of that card. But how do we know as hobbyists, is it going to say this was supposed to be for an Andrew Luck, and that's why this point total is this much? I mean, I guess that's where it's kind of getting to a gray area and a wait and see approach.
Well, that's hard to say because, I mean, what may be valuable to you as a collector is not valuable to me as a collector.
Right.
So you're going to put a huge value on Joe Montana stuff. I put essentially no value on Joe Montana stuff. So it's objective. I don't know how you say, oh, well, this – I mean, you could base it on rookie. Rookie's a little bit easier because you're like skill position player, quarterbacks. Quarterbacks tend to sell better than, you know, defensive backs. So you can put a value on that. But with the veteran players, I mean, what's collectible to you may not be collectible to me. So
that's a little objective. What do you mean you don't like Joe Montana? That's craziness.
Dude,
I'm way off the page.
You know, I would take a Jim Everett auto over a Joe Montana auto any day.
Oh my gosh!
Come on! Wow.
That's
actually is an interesting point. I think that what you bring up, it could be a good or a bad. For me, I like, you know, I collect my certain players, but I like that they've got this whole Kodak thing. They got a custom setup rig, high resolution image capture station. They said that's going to be taking pictures of all these, which is going to go into their whole self-authentication that we can talk about. But you're going to be able to pick the exact cards from stock that is live and existing in inventory. So if you're not super picky or you're like me where I'm just terribly impatient, I love the fact that even if I had an RG3 or I might have had an Andrew Luck or something like that, I've got a lot of points where I could pick something. I could go through and see whatever is in stock and pick one out, and in 3 days I'm going to have that in my mailbox, which for me, you know, money today is worth more than money 8 months from now or a year from now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we'll be able to, of course, like you said, who knows, and we're still yet to see what exactly they have in inventory, if they're going to have a very big, ever-changing stock of items in there, or if it's going to be a very limited selection, that's still to be seen. But the concept that I can actually pick out the exact card, look at the condition, I could pick out a three-color patch. I no longer have to worry about, you know, I wonder whether my redemption is going to be a one or two or three-color patch. If a multicolor patch is available and I have the points, I can get that card, the exact one that I want, which is pretty cool, you know, in theory. So we'll see how it plays out, but for everybody collects differently. For me, it seems like something that would work for the way I collect. I think there's just nothing worse for me than having to wait a year and have 10 cards still unredeemed, never knowing if that jerk is going to sign his card.
Yeah.
Well, and exactly. And I think the element of, like, being able to go on there and look what you can get with a certain amount of points also creates a little bit of excitement and more awareness for their brand as well. So, I mean, I think it's great from a marketing standpoint. And, you know, you get people to sign up. Maybe they can send out, you know, emails about products and stuff like that. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I refer to this because we're kind of creating a reward system for our site as well. I kind of refer to it kind of like a Chuck E. Cheese type thing where, you know, you're playing a game and you get 500 tickets. Well, that, you know, that little tennis ball thing is 1,000. So I got to come back when I got more tickets if I want that little tennis ball on the rope thing. So that might be like your, you know, I could get a Mike Gillisley now, but I could wait and get an Eddie Lacy for 500 more points. So it kind of creates that element of chase and excitement as well.
Yeah, the weird question is, you know, it does bring up some other issues, like how are group breakers going to actually determine who gets a card, which, again, poses either a problem or an opportunity, depending on how you want to look at it, because you could either say, oh, crap, I don't know how we're going to give these away. We'll have to random them off or give them to people who got shut out. Or you could take it and be creative and come up with ways to say we're going to combine all of the rewards points from one case break, and one person's going to get those, you know, and random it off between those people or something like that. I think it could be a cool thing, but initially my whole question was, how in the world are group breakers going to determine what team rewards card goes to?
Yeah, me and Dan are just going to keep them.
One of my concerns with that is that it sounds like these reward points are going to replace hits. So if we're dealing with a product that only has two hits, maybe four hits, and we get two of those redemptions out of one box, or rewards points out of one box, now that product that had two hits now, or had four hits, now has two hits. So I think it is going to be replacing hits. So it's a little confusing that way.
Yeah, it certainly is, because these are supposed to be interchangeable for autographs on their website. So these are still going to be considered hits. You're right. So in that case, if you're doing that, you got to find a way to divvy them up and make sure that somebody gets those cards.
And it kind of gives the manufacturer something to hide behind, and they can just start loading up these points, especially if they start showing a lot of value with them. I mean, kind of takes the point of going out and getting all those autographs. I mean, they can just – I mean, hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully it's not like every box is going to have one of these reward points, but we could be looking at that in the future.
Well, I mean, to get to their point, to see the other side, and I see your side too, Dan, I think that they came out with their statistics, and I think the worst product was basketball, and they said they were 88% live. So that means if we're going to go by their numbers, and it says, will the reward systems replace all hits in the product? It says, no, only when a card that was planned into a program that would have ordinarily been a redemption will be a Panini rewards card instead. So that's what they're planning. But so if they are up to an 88% to a 90% redemption ratio, that means one out of every 10 boxes, right, if it's a one-hit product. I'm not a math genius, but I just did that on the fly. So for that means maybe they would eliminate the guy that maybe isn't really wanted. Like if it's a seventh-round guy that didn't sign, maybe they just won't put him in. There won't be a reward point, we can hope, maybe. Last year, 2013 products for football seemed to be – they didn't have a whole lot of redemptions from Panini standpoint. So let's just hope that these guys sign. We don't see a whole lot of these points. Let's just – you know, maybe this will get them up on their game and get them to make sure these cards are live.
It's funny, well, in 2013, I don't think there would have been a big difference between an E.J. Manuel, you know, the top quarterback taken in the draft, Panini rewards, and a third-round defensive back. It was not a spectacular year for the 2013 rookie class.
No, it wasn't. And we alluded to it a couple shows ago. You know how elevators, when you're in certain hotels, they skip the 13th floor? Well, that's probably what should have happened with 2013 football.
Good.
So we talked about the 2013
reward
stakes,
points.
You know? Yeah.
2013, you would have owed points.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You got a redemption. You owe us 500 Panini rewards points.
Pretty much.
Or they could have done 2012 football series 2 and just do 12 all over again.
And this involved, I would buy the crap out of that.
So would I.
Yeah. We all probably would. I was thinking if they were going to market you know, if you think about it, Andrew Luck, the jerseys last year from the rookie premiere, well, if you put him in as a second-year guy, it could actually truly be his rookie jersey. So they could have marketed it, say, sophomore season, but this is his rookie jersey. So technically, in parentheses, this is a rookie card because it's his rookie jersey.
Yeah.
Surprising.
I don't know if they would have gotten Beckett's buy-in with the RC stamp.
Right, exactly, right.
No, you gotta ease up. Like, you're gonna give too many ideas, man. That's a scary deal right there.
Yeah, I know. I gotta start charging. So, all right.
What do you guys think of the self authentication that Panini's gonna be launching?
I think it's something that needed to be done for a while, and I applaud them for doing that because patch faking is becoming more prevalent on the market. And you know, there's some guys that are some sleaze balls, lack of a better word, that are, you know, capitalizing on cards. So I think it's a great thing, and it assures the collector that this purchase made on eBay or whatever, I can check the database and make sure this card is 100% authentic and it wasn't a Kmart jersey that wound up in my Kevin Durant card.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For those of you that didn't know, the self-authentication, I spoke with a gentleman that works for a third-party does all the technology consultation for Panini, helped them set up everything at the summit, but also helped develop the self-authentication program. Really nice guy, really interested in the hobby. This is something they've been working on for years now, according to him. But essentially they created their own rigs to photograph cards, and they're going to be doing this on their high-end products primarily. But you're never going to have to worry about National Treasures or Flawless or Immaculate wondering whether the patch is legitimate or not. There's going to be a QR code on the back of the cards, and you just take a picture of that QR code on your mobile device, and it instantly shows you a real scan of that card while it was still at Panini, after it was autographed, after it was live, after it was cut, right before it was packed out. That's a picture of that card. So If the picture on your phone doesn't match the card in front of you, you know it was tampered with. And hopefully that eliminates a lot of the tampering altogether.
Now, do you think they're going to do it with their – me and Ryan were talking about this off-air. Do you think they're going to do it for, like, say, rookies and stars? Or are they only going to – do we think they're only going to do it for their high-end products?
I know that they're going to be doing it with additional products because he mentioned to me that they had to modify and customize the camera – for refractor-type cards like their Prism Technologies. And so I know that Prism, Spectra, and those that are very shiny aren't necessarily considered high-end, and the ones that are considered their highest end, none of them are based on foil board cards. That's, you know, the only clue that I have that they're going to be doing this or testing this or attempting to do it on additional lines. But I know that initially they're going to begin with their high-end lines.
Yeah, and that's another question. Ryan in the chat says, is it going to be just prime patches? Are they not going to authenticate the single color? I think they probably would have to, because then somebody could just take out that single color and put in a prime.
It's a good question. I don't know the exact answer to that. But as far as I know, the way they suggested would be within these products, every card that's going to have a patch in it within this product is going to be photographed and in it. So I don't know that they're going to take specific inserts. The way I understood it is National Treasures, every card with a patch is going to be on there. It could be that they make it exclusive to the high-end, you know, out of 99 rookie patch autographs and leave the, you know, game-worn dual jerseys that don't have any autographs out. I'm not quite sure yet. I'm still waiting for them to release additional information on Knight's Lance, but I understood it to be entire products.
And that actually brings up Lori's got a good question in the chat too that says, you know, we're banking on the QR code to be prevalent for a lifetime too. I mean, is that technology going to stick? I guess if it doesn't, they're going to have to document it on a website somewhere. You know, where I guess they're kind of banking on this QR code to be around forever.
Well, QR codes have been around for many years so far, and they're just becoming more and more prevalent. It's basically like a URL, and so unless someone deletes that entire website, the QR code is nothing but a link. That's all it is. So it's not something that you're going to lose any more than you're going to lose a link to a website. So the QR code technology in general, I'm perfectly okay with, especially when they're going to be doing it. They're going to be incorporating this into some really cool technologies like an app. So, you know, the Panini Rewards and the self-authentication are both going to be linked to a Panini app, they said, that's going to help collectors and give collectors the ability to exchange images or show off or search for particular cards and things like that. So I think it could be pretty darn cool, but I wouldn't be worried about QR codes just disappearing anytime soon.
And if you are, you know, just, you know, maybe 30 years from now, we're going to be on iPhone 25. Just keep your iPhone 5 next to your collection for 30 years.
There you go.
You got to turn that thing on, scan it with the QR, you're good to go, right? I mean, it's, you know, people still have LaserDisc players. They got the LaserDisc collection, you know? So
get it graded. A mint-condition iPhone 4 in 30 years could be worth a lot of money.
There you go, exactly. I'm sure the original Apple IIe is worth some bucks right now, so
yeah,
anybody hold on to those. So, yeah, I like the idea. I know Leaf kind of give some credit to Brian Gray. I know his operation is a lot smaller, but he was, I think, the first company that did the patch database. So, you know, he kind of spurned this whole thing, and Panini kind of took it a step further with the QR code and stuff like that. So, I give credit to making progress on this because this is something that needed to be done, and I'm excited about the patch authentication for sure.
I like that you mentioned that Brian's always done a real nice job of, you know, seeking out innovations within the hobby. And, you know, they're, like you said, smaller company, but a lot of times that gives you opportunities to make bigger decisions and move things around a little bit faster than a gigantic company might. And certainly Brian's done that. He's been at the cutting edge on several different things over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's probably a little bit easier for him to take a risk because he's a decision maker and it doesn't have to pass through 15 hands before it's approved. So, and you can see it kind of passing through the whole industry now. So that's good. It's good that they took that. So anything else for Dan and Ryan to add on the patch authentication side of Panini?
I think it's just a great idea. I mean, I mean, nobody's really going to lose with it, and it should have been done a long time ago. So I'm stoked with it. I think it's a great idea.
Well, your Jim Everett jersey that you have cut up here that you were going to put into a Jim Everett card is no longer going to work.
I know. I'm pretty bummed about that. too bad.
I know, man. That would have been a valuable card.
I would never cut up my Jim Everett. Plus, I would never cut up my Jim Everett jersey. You know how
hard
that was. You know how long it took me to find one.
You know, somebody should make a set with a Jim Rome, Jim Everett dual auto. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I knew. Yeah.
cool. So we could probably move on. Anything to add from I know you were in the Panini meeting that you said there was like 15 people there. Was there anything that was kind of brought up there that was not already talked about in your corporate address, Sergio?
That was a basketball-specific meeting, and a similar tone to the different, you know, the private group breakers meeting and the private retailers meeting. There was a series of, you know, probably four or five different items that were, you could tell, are the main issues that face our industry today, especially when you're like a group breaker or a card shop owner trying to make money, trying to sell product within the hobby. And those main issues were, you know, the overabundance of product lines, you know, not getting checklists on time, not getting images in time. I mean, the same stuff that eventually ends up hurting the collector. Those are the main things griped around about. Within the actual Panini basketball private meeting there, there were about 15 people in the room, and actually the whole meeting was a waste of time and a cluster because two people whose customer base is exclusively low-end spent the first 45 minutes. I felt bad for David Porter. He's the head of basketball for Panini. He had a nice presentation set up, and the first 45 minutes, I'm not joking, the first 45 minutes of his hour-long presentation was one guy interrupting every second, complaining that they didn't make enough low-end 99-cent a pack products. And
wow.
So the argument that Panini didn't even respond with, a couple other card shop owners, you know, and myself, and we said, you know, well, you know, you can purchase the retail products. You can, first of all, they had NBA hoops, they had Prestige. Those were all low-dollar products, but you're allowed to purchase retail from distribution. So you could buy the rack pack boxes and this and that. And they said, well, first of all, distribution didn't tell us we could buy retail. And second of all, we don't want retail. We want hobby. But we just want it to be like one autograph per 24-pack box and, you know, $1 or $2 a pack. We're like, okay, so there are some products that are like that. Here they are. And
yeah.
If you don't like that, you could buy some retail products, you know, through your distribution. And you think that's a simple open and shut case, especially when the majority of people are in there are saying, my customers buy $10 pack products. Prism Jumbo is what sells. You know, these $100 boxes are what sells. We don't really sell a lot or make much off of these low-end products. And this guy just kept going back and forth and back and forth, low-end, 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 low-end. Why not more? Why not more? Blah. And it's just like we're going in circles. And then finally they got to the presentation and got to show us in greater detail the products that are coming out from the basketball line. But we got to spend about 15 minutes on that and 45 minutes just scratching our fingers across the tables and clawing our eyes out, just wanting this guy to slowly sink back into the shadows and stop talking that nonsense about low-end stuff.
Low-end Larry. His name was
Yeah,
Larry.
And, you know, I understand that that's a market, and some people, that's their customer base, but you got to, at some point, you have to take the answer you're given and realize there is no better answer. You know, you've got a couple alternatives, and the bottom line for Panini is they lose a crap ton of money on those products. They're still very heavily invested in them. They're still going to keep doing them because they want to grow the hobby. They want young kids to have a product they can buy for a dollar a pack, et cetera, et cetera. But they can't do 10 products that are each a dollar a pack because they lose a fortune on those products. It's just not profitable.
Right.
They're losing a couple $100,000 each time they release one of those products. Just like card shop owners and everybody else, you make more money, you know, 10% margin, 20% margin on a $100 product is more than 20% margin on a $40 product. So, you know, eventually people have to keep the lights on and, you know, you got to take it, but he kind of just wouldn't budge.
Well, exactly. I mean, when we go to the distributors, I mean, 12-13 basketball was great, but you still see Brilliance, Crusade, you know, all the Prestige, they're still sitting there at the distributor. And it's like, you know, I know there's a market for it, but, you know, as group breakers, we're like, there was, you know, five too many of those. But, you know, I do see a market for the kids, and it's good to have one or two of those products. But I think they filled that need last year, and I think they've already kind of filled that need this year. They're coming out with Panini Basketball, which I think is like a $50 retail box with 24 packs. So it's pretty, you know, $1.50, $1.99 a pack. So they have that, but I guess
and now they're having
Low-end Larry wanted some product.
They've got Court Kings coming out, which is a beautiful hobby product for like $70 a box. You know, they've got some options. If you know, if I were to tell you one takeaway that I came out with, now that you're talking about distribution, it's honestly, you know, we talked about the big issues that all these different people that every subset really harped on during the event. But one thing that I kind of heard was, or one thing that just made itself a lot more clear to me was just how interesting distribution is within this hobby. My background is, that's what I do, is I manage distribution, you know, for industrial stuff. But it's something, you know, channel strategies and stuff like that, it's something I'm very knowledgeable about. It's what I do every single day. And my gosh, this industry seems to have a completely unregulated, unpoliced, it really seems to me the distributors run this hobby. For the first time ever, I was thinking to myself, Panini doesn't run this hobby, Topps doesn't run this hobby, Upper Deck, like Peach State runs this hobby. You know, these people run the hobby. The distributors make decisions on what products are made, and all the way down to kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, almost bullying card shop owners and group breakers into purchasing products that they say, if kind of holding you hostage. If you want to get National Treasures later in the year, then you better buy these products that we both know aren't going to sell. And,
right.
You know, the manufacturer ends up saying, hey, next year we're manufacturing the products that sold. That product sold out to distribution, and distribution just kind of forcing it or kind of twisting some arms to get it sold, and then it ends up sitting on card shop shelves because customers don't actually want it. But manufacturer thinks they sold out, you know, and I don't know. It seemed like there's some definite need for a little more regulation in the hobby with distribution, but I don't know if that ever happened because it seems like they're running the show.
They are, and I think Panini needs to change top everybody for that matter. They rely on the feedback from those guys as far as how the product is going, rather than like people like us or group breakers that open up every single product that see every product by the case. So they rely on their numbers, and you know, one distributor's numbers is different from the other. I think that they need to build a more of a database of people that open the product, because all my distributors, I think there's one that's maybe familiar with a few products. None of them seem to have any interest in the hobby. They're just interested in selling the product. So
yeah.
They don't really take interest in the design department, what values of hits, stuff like that. Most of them don't even know rookie classes. I mean, they just go off what's on the sell sheet. So, you know, you're
sure.
Right about that. But the allocation thing does stem from the top, too. So if, you know, like you mentioned, Peach State, if they didn't order enough of this, they only get a certain amount of NTOL. So it's definitely passed down through the channels. Of you need to buy this to get that. Well, Panini does that to them as well, and that's kind of what Donovan was just saying in the chat. They do the same thing. It's all the way down the line of the end consumer.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, but I guess we could go ahead and move on to the group breakers meeting, which was first thing I did Sunday afternoon at 12 in fabulous Las Vegas after we got off the plane. What was your take, as I think you were probably one of the only people in the meeting that wasn't a group breaker? What was your take about the group breakers meeting?
I was too embarrassed to leave. I'm fairly certain that they wanted me to leave. And I was talking. I was busy talking when I guess they asked everybody to leave. And so then I kind of turned around and was like, wait a minute, did he just ask non-official group breakers to leave? And somebody said, yeah, I think they did. And I was too embarrassed to be the only guy walking out while he was talking.
Well, yeah, if it was up to us, anybody could have came in. That was just kind of handed down to us. So I think you got enough ties that, you know, it didn't really matter. So it's good that you were there because now
really
we can get your point of view on it. So
yeah, there you go. I was planning exactly for this moment.
There you go. There you go.
You know, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was really neat, and it was interesting to hear the issues. One of the things that was interesting, a lot of times there are card shop owners that get it and those that don't. And those that get it think the group breaks are great for the hobby and they begin doing some on their own or they participate in some. They're not threatened by it. And then there are card shops that hate group breakers and think group breakers are ruining the hobby, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, you've got card shop owners that are using social media and you've got card shop owners that, you know, are still in the 90s and aren't. So,
right.
But one of the things was it was interesting to see that both groups had very similar issues. Group breakers, the biggest issues I wrote down, way too many products, like we were touching on right now. The checklist, just companies not giving checklists. I would love it if group breakers got together and said, we're not buying a product without a checklist. But after the rest of a couple of days there, I don't think... I don't think that's going to end up working out. I think they'd call everybody's bluff and wouldn't produce checklists anyway.
Right.
And the Razzes was an interesting conversation. It was interesting to hear group breakers for those people that are listening that aren't sure what Razzes are. Razzes are essentially, I take one of my $300 cards and I say, okay, I'm going to sell 10 spots at $30 a spot. Everybody sends me a gift payment through PayPal, and I raffle it off, do a little YouTube video or Facebook video, and one person will win the card. Nine people lost $30 each or whatever, and one person gets that $300 card for very cheap. It's a very fast-growing little subset. Typically, you've got a lot of people on Breakers now doing it, and you've got private groups.
It's illegal,
on Facebook
too.
It is illegal because it is strictly gambling. And so that is one of the cool things was seeing the pride that the group breakers in this room, you know, are all legitimate, you know, some of the best group breakers in the country, a lot of names that you've heard of. And there was a lot of pride. People took pride in that and said, we're not going to do anything that could be shady. We're not going to be doing anything that's borderline illegal. We don't care if there's money to be made going into this. It's illegal. That's all there is to it. I believe it's, what's his name, Lasko, the lawyer from Cardboard Connection.
Yes.
Yeah, Paul Lasko or Lasko?
Paul Lasko, I believe, yeah.
Lasko, yeah. He had some great things to say and really cleared it up and said no two ways about it. It's illegal. It is strictly gambling. And the area that we live in already as group breakers is already gray area. I mean, it's already on the edge. There is no legislation really, you know, deeming it 100% legal and perfect. There's just no legislation saying it's illegal. So group breakers in general, everybody's participating in the thing, and you've got a chance at getting a prize. But with a RAS, there's one person that's going to get something, nine that aren't every single time. And you're paying it all shady and all that stuff. So it was interesting to hear just from an overall perspective of the group breakers in the room, you know, they all have a lot of similar problems and in things like that. Not one person in the room said that they're going to be participating in RASs because then you could get your entire company shut down. You could get everything that you're doing shut down for the sake of trying to jump on one little trend that you could be making money on right now in the immediate future.
Absolutely. There wasn't one person there that was like, I'm pro RAS. You know, there didn't one person that said, I don't know these guys personally.
Well,
there could have been somebody there.
There's nobody who stood up and said, I'm pro RAS, but we don't know what people were thinking. I mean, there's definitely probably people in there who had either participated in RASs or have conducted RASs. I think the way the room was turning out that nobody was going to step up and go, you know what, the heck with you guys, I'm pro RAS. It just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But and at least anybody in there that might have been doing them should realize afterwards, holy crap, we got to cut that crap out before they, you know, before we get shut down or something.
Yeah.
I participated. I just found out about RAS about a month ago. And from about 4 weeks ago to 3 weeks ago, I mean, that stuff was harrowing. I mean, that I was just oh, yeah, $10 a spot? Sure, I'll take three spots. $20? Okay, I'll take two spots. You know, I ended up wasting too much cash that I was planning on bringing with me to Vegas. And I ended up with one card. So I was excited that I won one card. But I won a $10, like $20 Tavon Austin jersey auto. And I probably threw in $200. I mean, I was buying 5 out of 10 spots in some of these things because I was like, hey, I'm basically buying at half price. If I buy 5 spots, I'm guaranteed to win, right?
Right.
And, no, I lost everything. The Tavon Austin was one that I bought 2 spots out of 10, and I win that one. And these other ones, I mean, you've got very high-end things. You've got $600, $700 Michael Jordan autographs where they're selling, you know, 20 spots at $30 a pop. Or 60 or 10 spots at $60 a pop, and you've got some $3,000 cards that are going that are just a couple hundred dollars a spot, $300 a spot, and it just opens the doors for a lot of pissed off people and a lot of shenanigans. I mean, if I paid you with a gift and you don't send me the $3,000 card, you know, where am I protected? If I send it as goods. Now, and I get upset because I lost, I can claim to PayPal, hey, you know, I didn't get what I ordered. You know, there's just too many different legal issues.
Well, and not only that, most of the people that conduct them, from what I've seen, they actually aren't accepting the money. They're like the host, so to speak.
Right.
So you're actually
right.
Sending money to somebody that you can't even see on camera as well. So.
That's exactly right, yeah. So, I mean, it's fun. It's definitely a thrill. I mean, I've seen some people win, you know, $200-$300 cards for $10 for one spot. None of those people were me. But it's just like playing very, very high-end slot machines at Vegas. The odds are infinitely against you, and you really have to sit down and say, I am throwing away all of this money. But, you know, unlike slot machines and casinos in Vegas, where if you lose, that's it, get out, thank you very much, you know, enjoy the buffet, here people could just turn around and now all of a sudden claims start being made against one person, and there's a lot of opportunities for people to be hurting other people one way or another through this thing.
Yeah, I just don't understand the card is not even in hand most of the time. So you're basically raffling off this card that's on a like a picture of the card. I mean, what if somebody goes in there and runs like sends in 10 cards to be razzed and it's like $5,000 worth of cards over a span of the night and this guy doesn't even have the cards?
Well, the legitimate places, I've done it on some private groups that are legitimate, and they've got very strict rules and restrictions on how you run it to try to prevent stuff like that. It doesn't make it any more legal, but, you know, they've got rules in place, and you have to have a video, and the video has to be in this format. You have to show the card, show a timestamp on the computer, et cetera, and you have to have the head of the group, you know, approve it and all that different stuff. Or if you've never done it before, you have to mail the card to the person. So they've tried to establish the legitimate people. I say legitimate for an illegal practice. The legitimate mafia, you know, mafia bosses, they've got rules in place to try to make it more legit. But it's still, you're not even in the gray area. You're in the black area, and you're just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping for the best.
Absolutely. Yeah, Well, there's also the secret society of Jam and Jelly, which I don't even really know what it is. I think it's some kind of razzing Facebook club of some sort, and you have to be invited into it. But I do know that razzes happen on that Facebook club as well. But if you search for it, it doesn't come up. So I don't know. It is totally a secret society.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're – yeah, exactly. We'll see. I mean, it seems like, you know, I try to take the stance. I know it's illegal. I don't want to be, oh, I'm better than anybody like that. I don't want to take that stance. If you like to do that, you know the risk involved, so be it. But at the end of the day, it's illegal. That's all we're saying here. So,
yep.
You know, that you can take it for however you want. So to go back to the Group Breakers meeting, Dan, I mean – I think everybody was pretty positive and everybody was on the same page as far as what we should change. I mean, it's just a matter of getting these manufacturers to do it. Like you said, checklist. Another topic was redemptions. This was before the Panini Rewards thing came out, was, you know, redemptions. And expired redemptions was a big topic because, you know, getting them to change their policies is we just opened a box of Topps Unique last week or a couple weeks ago, and we got a Matt Kemp. It was the only auto in the box, and it was expired. And so you kind of get an SOL. Sorry, you're out of luck. You get nothing. Topps doesn't do anything for you. Panini's better with expired redemptions. But I think going forward, especially with the 2013 Topps products, you look at Chrome, Finest. I mean, you open a case, you're getting 7-8 redemptions in those products. They need to find a way to give something to the collector that's going to buy that 5 years down the line, or else that product's never going to move.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what was your – Dan, as I was, you know, I was kind of trying to moderate it, and props to Lori and Michael from SCL Cards for, you know, kind of – we kind of put it together and moderated it on the fly in a sense. So thanks to you guys. What did you take out of it as kind of watching the whole thing go down from the group break?
Here's my issue with the group break meeting. So it's all these group breakers. Well, a lot of our concerns – are with distributors and manufacturers. And since we're all in the room, explain to me why those distributors and manufacturers were not allowed in the meeting. A lot of our questions were going to be directly like related to those people representing those companies and those distributors.
Yeah, so, I was wondering the same exact thing, and it was actually a real a real question for me, because when they did have the executives talking, they were staged questions that had been asked long in advance. You know, people had submitted the questions. But in my head, I was like, why can't we just ask the questions that just came up, like yesterday at this group breakers meeting? Those are some of the, you know, hard-hitting questions that we need to be asking. And they kind of
I mean, I just wanted,
right.
I wanted to basically stand up and go, look, we all had an issue with, let's talk about immaculate basketball. And now that we have distributors here and we have the manufacturer here. So the first run of immaculate basketball, good. And then it took you guys two to three months to figure out packaging issues. And the second run comes out and it's nothing like the first run. I mean, it was almost a completely different product. I wanted to basically go, somebody shine some light on this. Tell me what happened, because there's a difference between the two runs. So let's talk about it. What happened? Did you guys decide to print more? I mean, let's be honest about it. Did you guys decide to print more, and this is what you guys were using as an excuse? I mean, that was that. You can't ask that question if they're not available and they're not there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a good question for Kevin, because he led me to believe that I guess he didn't lead me to believe. I thought they were going to be there the whole time. I guess I assumed that was going to be the case. And then, you know, when we talked the week before it, he said, you know, he wanted it to be nobody there that's going to sell to us. So I can understand the distributors not being there, because they're going to stand up and pimp their brand out. Oh, yeah, I'm this guy from this guy. So I understand that, but you know, maybe have a Topps or Panini in the back, and then we have a 30-minute segment where we direct or have them come in for the last 30 minutes, and we take the top five questions that we kind of put together while we're in there, the top five concerns, and have them answer it. I mean, that would have been maybe a little bit more productive. I don't know why it was there.
I think that's a good suggestion for next year. Having them in there the whole time, I think you run the risk of just having it turn into a bitch fest, pardon my French, but like we had in that basketball group where people just start, you know, going off on the manufacturers rather than actually discussing the issues relevant. But if you can come up with a list of questions and then the last, you know, 15 minutes have manufacturers' representatives in there to kind of answer some of the questions, I think that's a great, great takeaway to send to Kevin for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I understand not bringing the distributors in there so they won't sell these. Like, you have a captive audience in there if you have all these group breakers. But you do allow a certain distributor to throw these gift bags in there that have signed Damian Lillard jerseys. And they basically say, oh, these are from so-and-so distributor. Enjoy. This is for all the group breakers. Thanks for your support. That is the same thing as trying to sell you something.
Correct.
You leave there with this Damian Lillard jersey. You're like, oh man, they just gave me a $200 jersey. I'm pretty obligated to go talk to these people, thank them, and they're probably going to get an order out of me now. That's the same thing as having a distributor in the group break meeting and soliciting their brand.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean.
So that if you wanted to keep the distributors out of it, nobody should have got those gift bags.
That was kind of interesting. I expected kind of a pen and a pad in there. We open it up and it's like a Damian Lillard signed autograph authenticated jersey. I'm like, whoa, that was pretty crazy.
I was like, whoa, gosh.
Yeah, I didn't get any of those. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they had every group breakers. Basically, they went down the group breakers list and they put bags with people's names.
Oh, yeah, I recall the big orange bags.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I didn't know where to direct my questions. I guess we were told to, you know, the panel meetings on Wednesday was when we were supposed to direct these five bullet points. I don't know if that was handled or what. I had no direction on that, and it could have been a fault of my own. But I didn't know after we got those five bullet points what we were supposed to do with those. That wasn't clear to me, or maybe I wasn't listening. But so, you know, I guess I have to do my due diligence as a moderator now and maybe contact these companies with these five bullet points and see if we can't, you know, figure out the checklist issues, the redemption issues, the expired redemption issues, the too many products that we kind of came up with at the summit and try to get answers out of those. So,
regarding the checklist issues, I'm sorry, go right ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, go ahead.
I was going to say, regarding the checklist issues, what do you guys think? We heard all of the executives talk, and Panini Upper Deck Tops all generally came back with the same response. It's too hard, and it's too hard to do these in advance. There's too many variables. We're not knowing until the day of, you know, some of the players that are going to be in there. So we don't want to give inaccurate, from my perspective, 30 days, especially when card shops and group breakers are having to make buying decisions, 30 days, you should have a decent idea. And personally,
yeah,
I would rather have a checklist that has some asterisks on it saying we're not sure, to be determined, we're trying, but we're not 100% on this guy, and have a tentative checklist like that, even if it changes, rather than not have anything. Basically, the impression I got from the manufacturers is they just would rather not, because then if you do something like that, too many collectors, too many card shop owners or group breakers or whomever would rip their heads off saying, your checklist said this, and even though there's an asterisk, you ended up not having these players, and I'm ticked off, you know, et cetera. And so they just kind of would just rather not do it at all. Am I alone in thinking it'd be better to have something even though it's tentative, or do you guys really believe that a huge percentage of the people would have a big backlash towards the manufacturers if they're giving, you know, tentative checklists 30 days out and a player's aren't actually in the set?
I don't want to be a negative Nancy on this, but I almost think that they don't want to release a checklist because of the mystique of the product. They'd rather, leave you to wonder that who's going to be in it so they can sell more boxes rather than be I hope I'm incorrect on this, but it almost seems like they don't want to release a checklist because if you see that there's not this guy in there, you won't pre-sell it. Or, oh, you're doing pastime baseball, but you don't have Puig autos. I didn't know that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it almost feels I almost think they fear if they release a full checklist 2 months before the product's release that they're going to see a drop in their pre-sale numbers.
Out of all the conspiracy theories out there, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but that one sounds the most plausible, simply because I find it hard to believe that you'd have such a fear of collectors' response, you know, that the collector's response of, you know, having some sort of honesty and some transparency and saying we're not quite sure on all of these players, you know, that you're more afraid of the backlash of people, you know, saying, hey, this is not 100% accurate. I think the backlash is much louder right now, saying you're not giving us anything to make our decisions with, and we're having to guess, and we're making decisions that we would rather not have made because we're not having enough data to make a good decision. So I think there's probably some truth.
I mean, I know we know with football, the 35 rookie premier guys are going to be in there. We know that. So if it's a strong rookie class, if it's a strong rookie class like next year, we know it's going to sell. And whoever else they put in there, like, you know, Kaepernick or, you know, Russell Wilson or whatever, that's just added value. So we understand that. I mean, this year we kind of needed it with the 2013 rookie class. We were all wondering when limited or all these other products were coming out, like, is there going to be vets, you know, because there's only about 3 or 4 rookies that people really want, you know, out of this rookie class. So are you guys going to figure out a way to put in more vets? Are we going to know? So that's what's like, you know, it kind of, as group breakers, you're like, you know, how do you sell this team that doesn't have a rookie hit? Is there going to be vets? So, yeah, I would rather them be more transparent. And maybe by being more transparent, that would make them create better products and acquire better autographs, you know, in my opinion. So, I mean, Dan, what's your take on the non-checklist? Are you on the same page with me, or do you have a different?
I'm on the same page.
I got to wake Ryan up. We haven't asked him to talk for a little while, and I apologize about that. what's your opinion on the checklist?
I asked to buy it 3 years ago because I was putting them on my website 4 or 5 years ago. Because believe me, people complain about checklists now. There was nothing 4 or 5 years ago except for Beckett would put it up a month after the product would come out. That's why I started my website. That's why I started getting thousands of people coming to my website, because I was putting up this kind of sacred information. You know what I mean? Like, people couldn't find it, and I asked them about it. They don't even make the cards. Panini Top, they send it all to vendors, so they don't even know what's going to be in the set. There's literally probably, when it comes down to what's the checklist, there's like one or two guys who might know, who are acquiring all the autographs and putting the cards, all, you know, getting all the jerseys and stuff together. Tracy Hackler doesn't know. You know, these guys, they have no clue. And it's all done at some third-party printing facility that they have to wait to make sure that nothing got damaged or all the autographs came in or, you know, whatever happened. So they don't even know when the product's going to come out half the time. The release date changes every other week. So right. I think, as I'm starting to listen to all this, I'm realizing why people don't collect cards. Because, you know, we kind of praise Panini for these point systems, but for me as a customer, when I go buy something, when I go buy a dozen potatoes, I want a dozen potatoes. I don't want a reward point to get more potatoes in 6 months.
Right.
We're talking about spending your money and not getting anything back.
The reward point gets you your potatoes in 3 days, though.
As somebody who works on the internet, Panini, their main marketing blog and stuff, it's a .wordpress blog, and somebody who makes their 100% of my income on the internet, it's a complete joke. So when they start talking about apps and Kodak and databases and this, they don't even have their main website. They don't even own the content on that website. WordPress does. They literally don't even have a domain for it. So for them to be saying, oh, we're going to pull all these things off, I don't buy it. I don't think it'll help the products really at all. But getting back to the checklist, it's not going to happen. It's literally not going to happen because they don't even make the cards themselves. They don't even make the cards. And you have to realize where you are on the food chain. It's the leagues, the players, the distributors, the card companies, and then you start getting to the card shops, the group breakers, the collectors, the media guys. We're way down the food chain here talking about this. We're way, way down the food chain. So the fact that they kind of tiptoed around, and they tiptoed around what I talked about 2 or 3 years ago to them about checklists. They've been tiptoeing around it for years and years and years and years. When the product comes out or when they have it, they'll put it on their website or whatever they want to do with it. And other than that, forget about it. You know, I don't know why it's a big problem with the football. Like you said, Doug, it's the 35 rookie premier guys. That's it.
Yeah.
They're not going to – and maybe 5 Drew Brees autographs, maybe 5 Ray Rice autographs, maybe 5 Roddy White autographs. That's it.
And the basketball. The basketball, too. I guess it's more of a concern. I guess, like, I'm thinking, like, Bowman. Like, we know Chris Bryant's going to be in there. We know possibly that Abreu's going to be in there because he was shown signing Chrome. But is that Chrome? Is that Bowman Chrome? Or is that going to be Bowman? Is that, it's like, I know these prospects probably signed for a little while ago, so at least give us 20 or so of them. I mean, there's going to be 40. I guess, yeah, football and basketball, I guess we don't really have to be too concerned about. If you know it's Panini, it's going to be Bryant, and Durant's going to have autos in there because those are their guys. But I guess it's like more baseball products. Like, who is there going to be Babe Ruth bat pieces and Topps 5-star? Is there going to be cut autos and Jackie Robinson? I mean, so it's like that kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, I think bottom line, you're right, that we're not going to be getting any resolution on the checklist. For one reason or another, they're not going to be disclosing that, and I think they made that pretty clear, whether their reasons are legitimate or not, and most likely they're not. We're not going to be getting that, but I have no problem with, large companies using third parties for doing their technology. That's the way big businesses are. A lot of companies aren't doing all their technology stuff in-house. They do their technology stuff, they do the stuff that they're good at, but in terms of, I work for a very large company. My company would never be doing apps in-house or technology stuff in-house. Certainly websites they would, but for the sake of a blog, I've got no problem with them, having WordPress host it or a third party do their photo, their app.
No. This is what I have an issue with. To go to the Panini blog, it's .wordpress.com. Like PaniniAmericaBlog.com is available. They could probably buy Panini Blog from whoever owns it for $500. WordPress is fine. I don't have a real problem with WordPress. It's the fact they don't even host the content. They don't even own the website. It's a joke. I mean, it'd be like .blogspot, like tops.blogspot.com.
How does that offend you as a collector?
It doesn't offend me as a collector, but as somebody who makes 100% of their income on the web, when I see that, that's a joke. It'd be like apple.blogspot.com.
You lose some respect for their professionalism.
I doubt that they're going to be able to pull off anything, quote, technological either. Look at the HRX video card.
You've got one guy doing the blog, but the guy that's doing the blog who, you know, Tracy is by far the benchmark for any of these people that are doing blogging. The guy just doesn't stop working. But he's not the same guy that's doing the technology. You know, the guy that's doing social media at these companies isn't the same guy that's going to be responsible for a multi-million dollar initiative like Panini Rewards or something like that. He's just the guy that takes pictures and does a little blog write-up. I wouldn't have any problem, you know, thinking that a big project is going to fail because they don't know how to buy a domain name, which is funny. I grant you that. It's funny that they don't buy it when totally available. You know, it costs $9.99, I'm sure. I don't think
Trevor in the chat says he owns PaniniKnightsLance.com, so he'd probably sell it for a case of World Cup soccer, right, Trevor? They send you a World Cup soccer case,
which I am going to buy a case of. I'm very excited about World Cup products.
Yeah.
Every four years, I get into soccer big time.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's a good need. It's just going to be interesting. Yeah, people need to know about it. So, you know, they're going to – guys like you and us and stuff making people aware of soccer because I think it's got the biggest collector base that aren't collectors yet. So,
yeah, and we're talking about growing the hobby. I got to ask them about that, and they did say that they're going to be purchasing TV spots, commercials like they've done for their sticker albums on ESPN and ESPN2 and stuff like that. So, you know, from what I gathered, they're going to be investing some money into promoting that on mainstream television, that set. So they said they're going to really put a lot into it. Hopefully that pans out, because I think that's a huge opportunity to bring a global collector base to, you know, that might love sports but have no familiarity with actual trading cards.
Yeah, I think it's we'll see how that turns out. I'm excited about – I don't even really watch soccer, but I'm excited about the product just to kind of fill that void and make, you know, you're going to see guys collect teams that are still in it and stuff like that. It's going to be exciting. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. What else can we talk about, you know, different events? What can we move into here that we haven't already talked about? I think we already hit the group breaks, meaning Panini. Topps had a little, I guess, I wasn't even aware. They had some kind of a corporate address at some point. I think it was at I think they had it at Fatburger. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know where they were at, but I guess they were talking about redemptions as well, and they were also saying that they're going to try to acquire more players to sign during spring training. I think what I've gotten from both of these companies is they're going to try to acquire the autographs a lot earlier. Panini said 8 months. I think they were 6 months before, so they're going to start creating these products almost probably closer to a year before it comes out, so that gives them ample enough time to get these athletes to sign. So I kind of get that from Topps. This is from what I'm reading about Topps' corporate address as well. Also, they're going to be re-releasing or bringing back Topps Tech, which everybody seems to not like. I don't remember it. I'm sorry if I show my age here. I actually wasn't collecting when Topps Tech was out. I do remember Stadium Club back in 1991. Me and my dad built the whole Stadium Club set, so that's coming back. And then a high-end release named Topps Dynasty. So I don't know if the Topps Dynasty is going to be like a Flawless-type product. Kind of brings questions about, are they going to kind of attack a higher-end market than Five Star? What do you guys think?
So, actually, that's kind of all new to me. Did you read that on the Internet?
On the interwebs, yes.
On the interwebs.
Yes.
I heard something about the Stadium Club, which I think is cool. I assume it's going to be
that.
a I like a, it's going to be kind of a, like, low to mid, like, range product, I assume, probably four hits a box, maybe. But that's
maybe,
the full bleed.
Yeah.
The full bleed pictures back in the day, I mean, those were sick. I mean, that was where it was at, man.
Yeah, Kodak. I remember it was like loud and proud on the 91 Stadium Club's boxes was photography from Kodak, you know. And it was actually pretty revolutionary. That's what got us back into the, you know, the hobby is, you know, me and my dad, we built the sets, and then that was the one that we actually bought packs to build the set. I think my dad would buy me, I think it started in 86. They would just put a set under the tree, and it would already be in a binder and stuff, my dad and my mom would do. And,
nice.
And then in 91, I know, it's pretty crazy when you think about it. And back in, then in 91, we got in with Stadium Club, and we kind of ripped wax to build the set. And so that was fun, and we did football that year too, 91 Stadium Club football with a Brett Favre rookie. And kind of what got me out of it was watching that set worth $300 in 1991 to fast forward to 96, the whole set was worth $15. So kind of got discouraged with collecting and came back in, you know, in 2008, 2009. So with the hits and the autos and stuff that, you know, we all have the same kind of story. It's like, oh, cards have autos and relics in it? Holy crap. No way. What is this? So that's kind of what got me back in. But it's good to see Stadium Club. It kind of brings some good collecting feelings with my father, you know, back into the fold of collecting. And, you know, I can only assume Topps Dynasty is going to be maybe a little bit higher end than five-star. And, I would like that. And Trevor says Stadium Club cards smelled awesome. Yeah, they do. They kind of smell.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, that was
right.
Wow.
They also admitted that the first seven baseball releases, this is Topps, by the way, they also admitted that the first, and this is courtesy of Becca.com again, I'm totally just reading off their news, acting like I know when I wasn't at the meeting. They admitted that their first seven baseball releases of the year are making less money compared to last year. While David Real did not disclose figures, he said some products were doing better than others, but that Topps was sacrificing profitability for brand equity. By underproducing a product such as Heritage, it creates a stronger chase factor. So in layman's, they
underproduce.
Yeah,
underproduce heritage. Underproduce heritage.
Yeah.
Underproduce.
Under.
Okay. All right.
Oh,
all right.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So that was definitely a theme. You know, Panini mentioned that they actually produced substantially less 2013 products than 2012. You know, and that was, you know, surprised a lot of people, but definitely a theme was companies touting that they're producing slightly less of certain things to increase value. But, you know, from everything I had heard and from everything we see as collectors and group breakers and all that is quite the opposite, just too many products out there.
Right. Yeah, just too much of one product. I mean, you take a product like, and I'm sorry if I cut somebody off, take a product like Prism Jumbo, which, I mean, really didn't expect much out of it, but because they've only produced 4,000 cases of it, it went up and it was collectible, and they had more color in there and stuff, and it jumped up well past the pre-release price, and it still is because they only made 4,000 cases of it, so... You know, I don't know from a licensing issue how much they have to pay, but I would definitely love to see that more going forward is let's create a little bit less product. Let's try that route.
Well, I don't mean to butt in, but the reason why they created less product is because there's less demand for it. Trust me, these guys wouldn't leave – Topps wouldn't leave money on the table. Panini wouldn't leave money on the table. Look at 2012. I mean, they'll rake in the money when there's three good quarterbacks in the set. And
right.
This year probably, too, will be a strong year for football and an up year for basketball as well. So they made less Heritage because last year it was down. And, you know,
supply
those,
and demand,
those
I guess,
to me actually
from
the
business.
Were the
yeah.
– Those to me were the most telling quotes from the whole industry summit. You know, there seemed to be a lot of like, oh, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll promise to do this in 6 months, so on and so forth. But the fact of the matter is, Topps says they make to order products. We've known that for many years, and that orders were down this year. So that means sales were down. And then we know Panini sales are down from 2012. So to me, those were the two telling statements. And I don't think reward points, as good an idea it is, and patch data, but that sounds like more work, to be honest. I don't think that's going to bring people back into the hobby. Johnny Manziel will, maybe Andrew Wiggins and Joel Embiid and some of these Jabari Parker and these guys coming into the NBA draft. That's going to help sell cards, but these guys aren't leaving money on the table for the sake of collectability. They may have said They may have said that. They may have said it with a straight face. But trust me, these guys aren't leaving money on the table for
collectors. I saw them saying pretty much point blank, 2013 rookie year sucked. You know, so obviously we're not going to make as much product in 2013 as we did in 2012. I think the opportunities to bring new collectors to the hobby are through things like the soccer or really taking advantage of the licenses. I really like what Panini was going to do with, and hopefully they're going to push some advertising on this as well, but using the game-used shorts and the game-used sneakers, which are popular to tons of basketball memorabilia collectors. And they're going to be taking those game-used sneakers from Dirk Nowitzki and Kobe and Blake Griffin and all that, pieces of those into their high-end products like Immaculate or that. I think things like that could potentially blur the lines between the memorabilia collectors, that love collecting the shoes but aren't going to fork over, $6,000 for the pair of game-used Kevin Durant shoes. Here, for $500, they could get a piece of his shoe or of his shorts that he wore in a game that they're actually specifying. I think things like that are neat. But it's always interesting to try to, talk about and brainstorm what can the companies do differently to actually engage collectors that are sports collectors but not really trading card or sports card collectors, because that's ultimately the goal that everybody should be striving for.
Absolutely. I mean, and we try to find the silver lining here. Sometimes we do, walk down because we see a lot of this stuff. I wanted to ask Brian and Dan, from 2013, what do you think the best thing out of the hobby in 2013?
You want to go first, Ryan?
No, I want you to go first.
All right. Best thing out of the hobby in 2013.
SportsCardAlbum.com.
SportsCardAlbum.com.
Nice. Nice plug. Checks in the mail.
No, seriously. I don't – it's hard because I remember the last industry summit, and the one Ryan was there, and we're all sitting there in Panini's public address, corporate announcement, all this stuff. And I remember – one of the guys getting up there and saying, you know what, I'm tired of hearing about the 2013 football rookie class. We're going to make this a great year. We promise you guys, this is going to be great. Somebody's going to emerge. Don't worry about the products. They're going to sell themselves. We're going to make it work. And then we all knew it. But we all kind of, jumped in line and kind of were like, okay, fine. They know. They got it figured out. And Doug and I were sitting there talking. We're like, okay, what they're going to do is they're going to put more vet hits in there. They're going to make it more of a vet-based products and just kind of put the rookies in there. And it'll be great. They'll add value that way, or maybe add value in design or be innovative with design or something like that. Well, none of that happened. And what happened is that every product pretty much came out and it tanked. And we were waiting for it to turn around, and it just never did. And now we're in 2014.
There was no technology you could make that would make a collector really freak out about pulling a Geno Smith autograph.
I know.
On how he played, it was just, man, it was just such a bad year. Eddie Lacy, the only guy I can think of that people are happy to pull. But it's so much work. I was very pessimistic coming into the year, and I never could have anticipated how bad that rookie class was from a collectability point.
And obviously, I was pretty stoked on Tavon Austin being a Rams fan, but
I do think he's awesome.
He
I do think he's awesome.
He's good. He's good, but he didn't come out of the gate just, you know, looking like an all-pro type caliber player.
So,
he looked
so
like a guy who was
still
not
telling me from
products.
Quarterback.
So you're telling me from a technology standpoint, even if they did like a Star Wars Princess Leia hologram on the wall and you open up a pack and Geno Smith comes out and says he loves you, that's not going to work?
That'd be a little
awkward.
If it
was Princess Leia telling me she loved me, then it would have worked.
Oh, okay.
All
right. well, Dan, you beat around the bush on what was good in 2013.
No, didn't I just – no, that's what was good. We got lied to. That's it. No,
all
I mean,
right,
I don't know. No, I mean, 2013 Museum Football.
Yeah, that was
good.
Excellent.
Hey, that really was
good.
Big prize.
Good,
pleasant,
good
surprise.
Product. Good product.
Very good.
Beautiful design.
Great design, and you know what? They loaded up with a lot of vet hits. It was really vet heavy. And actually, I like Spectra Football. Give them a lot of releases to make something good. If Spectra or Museum Collection would have came out early in the year, it probably would have got some people a little bit more excited about.
Well, and
you know,
to get and to get in their corner, you're devil's advocate, Doug, right? Devil's Doug. We don't know the amount of rookie stickers that they have to buy. So they literally probably have to go through 20 to 30 products before they actually can recoup some of the money with this bad rookie class in order to start putting in some vets in the later products. I know they should have been in earlier, but I think that they have to cite, like they have Eddie Lacy to a, you know, 4,000 auto deal or something. So they have to, I mean, he's one of the good ones, but like Ryan Swope, you know, they might have had him for a 3,000 autograph deal and they got to slowly get rid of that stuff and they don't want to water you down with rookies. I think to the point where now where they're at with Spectra, five-star coming out, National Treasures, these later end of the release products, they can breathe now and maybe acquire some more vet autographs. That's my take, because I know they have to invest heavily at the rookie premiere.
If I open NT and I pull a Ryan Swope RPA, I'm done.
Well,
the
you
final
probably
straw
pull
right
a
there.
Swope RPA.
Yep.
But I
that's what I'm saying.
RPA, but I will put money on pulling a Swope auto in there. I'm sure he's in there.
But I mean, the RPA is a funny thing because he never actually wore a jersey, so that would be like that would be it. I just wouldn't be able to live with that. I know it's actually should there should all be 101s. like
2013, Ryan. What's your take? Good stuff that came out of 2013.
I personally, I have like good things that happened. Like we were at the rookie premiere, the National Card Show. There was a bunch of other card shows that I went to, and stuff. You know, good for the industry. Like I think it's easier to connect people online. I think it's easier to buy cards online now that you have things like Check Out My Cards and eBay and some other stuff too. And with social media, you can do some trading and on forums and stuff. So I think that has progressively become easier. I'm going to stick with Check Out My Cards only because I can literally sit from my couch, buy 50,000 sports cards, resell them, and never have to take delivery of them, never have to see them, never have to pack and ship them. All I'm literally doing is clicking buttons, just buying and reselling cards. So for me, that's something that I've always like wanted to do. I always hated the pack and ship process. I always hated the eBay process with the scanning, and you're dealing with customer service and questions and blah, 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 blah. So for him to kind of be able to take all that away, and I can literally just sit there on my computer and buy and resell cards, you know, essentially digitally, with not having had to deal with any of the customer service issues. To me, that's amazing. I know the prices to send cards in to Check Out My Cards is expensive. It's not cheap. So, you know, I only submit my own cards when I'm getting a deal, like at the National or he runs some kind of special, but I could sit there all day long and just buy cards and resell and buy cards and resell, and people are selling stuff real cheap on there. And, he has a lot of buyers. So,
And what did you say? Didn't you say you made in 2 years, you made like 10 grand or 5 grand or something in 2 years?
I made a few grand.
A few grand?
I've done like $25,000 in sales. I've done like $25,000 in sales. Now, how much I've made off that? A few grand. Definitely a few grand. But it's all just me turning – I didn't deposit $20,000. I mean, I might have deposited of real money, like a little over 1,000 on that site, maybe a little more, a couple thousand maybe, to buy a whole bunch of cards and just sit back and tell him. And I only pay about $6 a month in his little stuff. It sounds like I'm like selling his site or something, you know what I mean? But I really just enjoy it. For the last like 2 or 3 years, I literally just enjoy it. And it's cool because I learn about cards because I'm seeing all these cards, I'm pricing all these cards on the computer. I'm learning about which cards sell. When Bryce Harper got called up, I literally sat there and just bought and resold like 60 Bryce Harper cards in like 3 hours, literally. Just sat there and just started buying and reselling all these Bryce Harper cards and got rid of them all by like within a 24-hour period. It's crazy. So it's just a really fun – it's been fun for me, and I think people with smaller collections, like looking to sell, and definitely people looking to buy. I think it's a really cool thing. So for me, that's
definitely
a big highlight for me.
Absolutely. And I got a couple things I wanted to add. Ryan in the chat has a good point about 2013 was good for eBay purchases. You could pick up your PC players from football at a relatively good price. So that's a good thing. Also, in 2013, going to the National for me and interacting with collectors, because obviously you guys see us on the cam and all we see is your screen name and your chat. Collectors are awesome. I mean, the most down-to-earth people for the most part. You can sit there and chat with everybody. Everybody's inviting. So I would say for 2013 to actually go out there and meet collectors at the National and at card shows and stuff like that, I mean – passionate people about what they collect, very knowledgeable, very down to earth. A lot of them would invite you home and have dinner with them and stuff, sit down and shoot the mess. So that was one of the things, is getting out there from behind the computer and meeting some of the collectors and our customers that buy into breaks, just really cool people. So I wanted to segue into just a real funny story about people in the chat are asking me about it, about the bench warmer story that I had. So we were doing breaks, and the bench warmer booth was behind us. So I said, I'm going to get them to write Mojo Break on their card and on the card that they were autographing. So there was three girls that were autographing cards for anybody that walked up to the booth. And there was nobody at the booth at the time. Dan was opening some cards. So I went over there, and I, got the autographs and wrote Mojo Break. And the last girl, and they were really nice, And the last girl was saying – She was doodling on the card, and she's like, I like to doodle, and I didn't even mean it this way, but I said, I like to doodle myself, and I just got really awkward.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I actually meant I like to draw, but it came off in front of some, three beautiful girls. It's kind of being a little awkward, and I don't think they caught it, thank God, but I kind of walked away going, yeah, I can get back to the card. So it was kind of a funny, awkward moment at the same time. So, I hope my wife's not listening. I like to doodle myself, right? But anyway, so I wanted to segue into the Beckett announcement before we end the show, because it's already been an hour and a half. It feels like we've been talking for 15 minutes. But I know, Sergio, you were at the Beckett presentation. Can you kind of give us an overview of their new Beckett, what is it, Beckett Seller? Is their official name for it?
Beckett Business Solutions.
Beckett Business.
So it was nice to see Beckett. I grew up, collecting as a kid, and I'd spend my allowance on Beckett magazines. You ask my parents, I'd be, sleeping with a Beckett under my pillow. I've still got a bunch of my old Beckett's from when I was a kid, and it feels to me that for a long time they haven't really been relevant. Now, price-wise, people are going more on. Modern-day collectors go more on the eBay completed sales than on, Beckett book value and stuff like that. They've got their forum, which is what brought me back to the hobby back in 2009, which is nice. But for a long time, you'd think that Beckett, the people that invented pricing out cards, would be leaders in innovation within the hobby, and they've been pretty silent just plugging away at their magazines and their website and their forum, and that's about it, just selling their online price guide. For me, it was refreshing to see that Beckett is investing a fortune into developing a program that is intended to help brick-and-mortar card shop owners. And so the idea behind Beckett Business Solutions is that Beckett has a large database of all of the cards, presumably in existence. They've spent the last 2 months doing nothing but scanning with a bunch of employees, scanning 37 employees, I think they said, scanning around the clock, day and night, scanning cards laboriously over a scanner. And all of that so that they can create a database of these 2 million pictures front and back of all of these cards. The idea is a card shop owner can go ahead and say, okay, I busted 2014 Topps Heritage. Let me look through the database and just check mark, you know, okay, these are the 100 base cards that I've got, and I've got 20 of this one, 15 of this one, 10 of this one, 5 of this one, 100 of this one, et cetera, and then press one button, and all of those cards are instantly brought, connected into their eBay store. It's an exclusive partnership that Beckett's come to terms with eBay, and it allows basically at certain price points for card shop owners to have almost eliminated listing fees so that they can get a listing fee for, you know, 8 cents or under a fraction, 8/10 of a cent for a card, for a listing fee. You know, the caveat is it costs a lot of money. I mean, beginning packages are not a lot. They're $100 a month, $99 a month to push the cards to eBay and use their accelerator program. But they go up to $2,000, $5,000 a month. $2,000 a month gets a card shop owner 250,000 listings at less than a cent per listing fee. So that's really, really cool. And the pitch that they were trying to make is, listen, you guys have a million cards. What are the singles worth that are on your shelf? If a collector comes in and buys a card and searches through a box and finds the card they want, you're going to sell them for a nickel or 10 cents. If you sell a card on eBay, you might sell it for 50 cents, and you got shipping fees and listing fees and all that stuff. But if you sell it through Beckett, through their listing, through their eBay connections and additional search engine, you know, optimization, whatever, then you could sell that same card for a dollar. And so, you know, the value is supposed to be, yeah, you're paying us a couple $1,000 a month, but now you're going to be selling 200,000 cards at a dollar a pop or 75 cents a pop, where you wouldn't be selling those yourself normally. They'd just be taking up space. So great idea in theory. There are some things that card shop owners address to me that are some sort of issues with it. Like, first of all, let's say we've got 250,000 cards listed. If we sold 10,000 of those, I don't have the manpower to fulfill those orders. At a dollar a pop, I couldn't hire enough, you know, 16-year-old kids and pay them with a Yu-Gi-Oh card. I couldn't hire enough of these kids to be filling in the orders for me, and then all of a sudden I could get bad eBay reputation. Secondly, obviously the price was a big deal. The biggest concern I got was some card shop owner said, all these base cards that I do kind of, I do sell some of these little sets and some of these cards for a dollar a pop on eBay, or we have collectors coming in to buy them. But if we've got all of a sudden, you know, 20, 30, you know, even as little as 20 card shops in the country, 30 card shops in the country participating in this, each throwing in hundreds of thousands of the same base cards from the same new sets, then suddenly we're flooding the market with these base cards, and you can tell me that I'm going to sell it for a dollar, but if there's 100 copies of the same base card, eventually it's going to drop the value down. So I don't understand it. I'm not a card brick-and-mortar card shop owner. I don't understand all of the different scenarios and intricacies involved. I thought it sounds like an awesome program that they're going to have a lot of support for. But there are some card shop owners that have beta tested it at the $2,000 level that had nothing but extraordinary things to say about it. The card shops that I'm closest to felt that they'd either have to learn more about it or that it just probably wouldn't fit their needs. It wouldn't be worth the risk of investing.
I'm looking at the BeckettBusinessSolutions.com, long website name.
Let me know if I butchered any of those facts.
No, no, I don't even know about the facts. I'm just kind of – they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different package details with check marks. It's very, very detailed on their prices, I guess. But what – so you're still shipping the cards, though, right? They're just basically listing it for you as from what I'm gathering here?
That's the way I understood it, yes.
Okay. So,
they've got their database and them linking directly using their accelerator program, their database. So you don't have to actually type any of the details for the card. You pick the cards out of their database, press a button, and all of the cards already have their images, already have their details. All you do is set the price, but you didn't actually have to scan a card and input it or add the details. It all comes directly from Beckett connected to eBay.
Gotcha. I guess this, the only – also what I'm looking in, I think we talked about this off-air, is what if – I mean, maybe people aren't as sticklers with base cards on centering, but what if the stock photo is really centered, then you get a card that's, like, off-centered from the seller, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
I don't know if it happens as much with base cards as it happens with autographs. You know, people really are – you may not grade a 50-cent, you know, Will Clark auto – or Will Clark base card from pastime unless you're Dan. You know, people – but I don't know. I guess that's what I think. I obviously see that it's kind of like they're taking, they're coming. It's like consignment to the max, like the ultimate consignment kind of type thing. Ease of maintenance is what they're going for, I guess. But $99 is the cheapest, and you get, you don't get free eBay listings at that price point. So I think,
and you're not going to get the stock photo database or the Beckett Marketplace at that price either. Those begin at, I think, $250 a month package.
Yes, yeah, and the online advertisements, correct. Yeah, so it's a lot of options that I guess they have some videos on their front page that maybe explain it more in layman's for dummies like me, but there's definitely a lot of options on here. So it'll be interesting to see. I'd like to talk to somebody in 3 months that's used this to see if, you know, what they were doing before.
Absolutely.
Compared to they were doing with Beckett, you know. So,
yeah, and I'd like to hear from those same people after, you know, 10 or 20 more card shops start trying this thing out, see if, you know, the benefits start diminishing after a while if a lot of other people are using it, or if, you know, I could be totally wrong and it just turns out to be something that people generally love. But definitely they gave a list of some of the names of people that are using it, and I think the Beckett blog is certainly going to be reaching out to those people too, but I'm going to be doing the same here in the next 4 to 6 months and just ask those people if they still got their rosy-colored glasses on or, you know, real testimonials of what they think about the actual program.
Yeah, I've never seen a subscription service, you know, that high. So it'd be interesting to see. I know there's a lot of features that they're offering. I wouldn't be shocked if Check Out My Cards' next step is to sell directly to eBay for you, or do they even have that option yet? I think that's kind of what this stemmed from, in a sense. Beckett kind of saw that they could take a page out of COMC's book, and I think you know what, competition may just make both these companies better. So we'll see. At the end of the day, COMC is going to step up their game. Beckett's going to stick up their game, and at the end of the day, it's going to be just better probably for collectors. I'd just like to see how this business solution pans out.
So someone like Ryan that expressed a lot of knowledge about COMC, how do you see this thing going now that Beckett and COMC kind of broke off their relationship and Beckett's doing things themselves? Do you see that as, you know, to the detriment of COMC or actually to their benefit? What do you think about that?
I think it's going to work out really well for Tim and Check Out My Cards. As little faith as I have in Panini pulling off anything really technological, I have even less about Beckett. Beckett has a marketplace with about 76 dealers on it that essentially does the same thing. What this all boils down to, and I actually have some insight. I don't want to talk too much. I know way too much about this, but all this boils down to is Burbank Sports Cards and Check Out My Cards. When we talk about Beckett Marketplace, Beckett Business, that means Burbank Sports Cards, because when you walk into his card shop, his whole thing is built around the you literally order from the Beckett Marketplace. He told me when the Beckett thing shut down for 2 days, he said it was the worst 2 days of his life.
talking about the Burbank sports card seller. He's the only one with the type of volume that $500 a month is nothing to him because he has huge sales. So he can afford that. Whereas 99.9% of the other card shops are going to look at this and be like, I got to pay $100 a month before I even get out of bed and before I even list anything. Like, they'll just put the cards on eBay themselves. And what happens if you have a card shop and all your stuff's listed on Beckett and some kid comes in and he buys a card for 50 cents that you had on Beckett and now you got to go check? You know, it's just a whole mess. It's a complete mess. But Burbank Sports Cards has it very well organized. He's literally, when you go into his shop, you order from Beckett and you hand him a slip of paper and he goes in the back and he fulfills it. Yeah. So this is all about Burbank Sports Cards, period. And
they did mention – no, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, it all boils down to that. I saw at the end of the National, the Burbank Sports Card guy had to go over, and it looked like he was a little lapdog coming up to Tim from Check Out My Cards. I've never told this story before to anybody. He was a little lapdog because he needed the images. He needed pictures. Burbank Sports Cards needed pictures to sell on eBay and to sell on Amazon. They were going to start requiring it. So this whole Beckett business solution, this is just to get the images for Burbank Sports Cards. That's all this is. They're going to probably run some kind of contest where you upload images and they're trying to get all these images together for Burbank Sports Cards. Because he went over to Tim from Check Out My Cards to get him, to try to get a license deal. But Tim probably was like, meh, why do I need to deal with you? I was smart. I scanned all my cards that I've gotten and kept them. So Check Out My Cards is going to have a price guide, and he could do checklists. He could do a whole visual checklist on his website if he wanted to. I don't know how far he wants to take it, but Beckett called him in December, told him he got 90 days, we're going to cut you off, and that is actually coming right at the end of the month. So Check Out My Cards might be a little hairy, actually, for a month or two as they try to get all their data and kind of everything organized, but once that guy gets rolling, I mean, that guy worked for 10 years at Microsoft. He quit Microsoft when Microsoft was good. He quit Microsoft to come work in sports cards. I mean, I've never heard a story like that before in this industry, and there's nobody with half the smarts as this guy does. And at the end of the day, it's going to be Check Out My Cards and eBay at the end of the day.
Well,
you know.
What I give Lori, not to cut you off, but I get Lori's got a good point that, man, the guy from Burbank Sports Cards must be just a great salesman because he basically got eBay and Beckett to fund his business. So
sure,
I mean,
and if you look at, he actually did show off some instructions on, you know, this is only going to work if you're a really organized shop, which I could count on one hand the card shops that I've visited. I've done a local card shop road trip visiting, you know, 20 some shops in, you know, from Florida to Texas. And, you know, I can count on one hand of the ones that were really super organized. But this dude had it down. I mean, the way he organized a shop and the way he was telling these retailers to organize their shops, it was brilliant. You can't do anything but sit and say the dude really knows how to structure and organize and, you know, his shop to enjoy the most profits. That was a really educational thing, actually, just seeing his little slideshows of how well they had everything down to the singles organized. And he did basically say point blank, if you're not capable of this kind of organization, you're probably not making as much money as you could, and this probably isn't for you. But you really do have to be organized to be able to sell singles. Otherwise, people can't find them, and you can't find them if they buy it.
You guys are right on about the Burbank sports guy. He's a dynamic presenter. He's great to talk to. Like, incredibly smart, incredibly organized. How he set up his shop is actually kind of innovative and really, really cool. I highly doubt 99% of the card shop owners I've ever met could even come close. And that would include me. That would include me.
And me too.
Ever
I
pull
was going to say,
like
I,
off.
Sure.
So.
I would never be able to. But it's created. It's kind of setting yourself out and creating a niche. He's created a niche where he can buy, you know, cards for 4 cents or pennies on the dollar, whatever he's buying. Somebody comes in with 200 base cards, he gives them $5, or maybe he even gives them a couple packs. And if he sells three of those base cards at $1 or $2 or whatever, he's profiting. So it's just like this inventory. So it's really a crazy business that no one ever wanted to take you know, give him any competition. And he's kind of set up this BBS, and we'll see. It'd be interesting to see if somebody actually compared, I don't know how you would, because they're obviously two different services, but if you compared selling on Check Out My Cards and compared it to BBS and did like the same amount of selling and see what your end result was with the fees on both and how your success was selling on both. That would be actually a really interesting comparison. So I do have a giveaway for people to call in because we're getting short on time. So we got about 10 minutes left, but the number is 347-855-8815. We're going to give away a $40 gift card for mojobreak.com, but you have to have a sportscardalbum.com account. So you have to give me your username when you call in. So we prompted you guys at the beginning of the show, so hopefully somebody made an account or they already have an account. So call in at 347-855-8815. First person that calls in will be a winner. So,
well, I'll tell you what, that's so kind of you to do that I'm going to have to do the same thing. I'll shoot you an email, but sometime over the next week, maybe we do a Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, however you want to do it, where we'll go ahead and donate a $40 gift card to Mojo as well.
Sweet. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We'll figure that out, and you guys give it away however you'd like. Thank you. We really appreciate that. Very kind of you.
Definitely. It looks like we do have a winner here. 305, what's going on?
Not much. First of all, I want to thank Sergio. He did a box break of the Top Soccer and donated his comments to me, and I was able to complete a complete set.
Sweet.
So my first complete set ever of something that I've hand-collated. When I was younger, I did, like, Diamond Kings and stuff like that, but since I got back into the hobby, I was finally able to put together a complete set. And while I'm on my thank yous, one of my goals for this year was to be able to make some trades, and we didn't even have to wait for the Mojo Break forum to open up. Ryan and I were able to make a very nice trade. So it's very cool to be able to have friends, or at least friendly people, in this hobby. Sometimes I get very discouraged that it's like impossible to make trades with people or even do nice things for people, but there are some really nice people out there, so it's really cool.
Awesome, man.
I'm glad you enjoyed them.
Awesome, Trevor. Awesome, Trevor. And yeah, and I take it you already have an account on sportscardalbum.com, because I think you were showing it to me the other day, or you linked it up in the room.
Stuff Miami.
Nice. Awesome. Well, we'll get that gift card to you, buddy.
It's very easy to navigate. I'm not that type of person, but you go out there and see some really cool cards and make people offers. I get that people like to put their collections out in front of people. And Sergio is very open to taking ideas. Like I suggested a memorabilia thing where you could put signed posters or photos or balls or whatever. And he was already on top of it. So it's awesome.
Awesome. Great to hear.
Thanks so much, Trevor. I really appreciate that.
Definitely. And thank you for supporting the show for as long and Mojo Break, man. It means more than you know.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
All right, man. We'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, Trevor's always, talking about the show and always listening to the show and always in our chat and stuff as well. So we definitely appreciate it, Trevor. And we'll get him a gift card, and we'll also run another contest with you and get some more people to the site and promote the good word, because, you know, good guys in this hobby like yourself, you know, and such a good tool needs exposure. So
you got it. Thank you guys very much for providing that.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll be talking with you, and I appreciate the time on going over the summit, having you on, because you made a lot more of the meetings than we do. So thank you so much for, you know, providing the content, providing your opinion and everything, and we'll have to have you back on soon.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks to all of you. Really appreciate you having me on.
All right, thanks.
We'll
sounds
thank
good,
you.
Sergio. Appreciate it. Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Good night, guys.
Awesome. So, wow, we only got like 5 minutes left. Craziness. I didn't even know we
good.
Were talking about stuff, you know, good content, good opinions. I think we all have different opinions, I think, which makes for a really good content at the end of the day too. So, which is good. So
I got a little teaser for the next show.
Yeah.
Before, because we only have 5 minutes, so I can tease it up. obviously Upper Deck got the licensing to NHL. Do you think Panini passed on that because they're going to be trying to make a move on Upper Deck?
That's what everybody's speculating. Everybody's speculating on that.
And I'm going to basically, we're just going to think about that, and maybe next week we can sit here and talk about it. I have my opinions on it. Ryan probably has his opinions on it. And I assume, Doug, you probably have some opinions on it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, well,
why not buy the whole thing? Why not buy the whole thing with the license involved in it?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Let somebody else do the footwork for you.
That makes sense. Yeah, well, definitely. There's probably not enough time in 4 minutes to talk about that one.
Oh, hell, that's why it was a teaser.
Yeah, definitely a teaser. A small announcement from us. We're actually opening a card shop. It's kind of a small one, but we're opening a card shop. So if you're in the San Jose area and you want to stop by and meet us, there's probably not a lot of you that want to see our faces. But if you do, we'll be opening a shop soon. You have to have a secret password to get in the gate, but other than that, no, I'm just kidding. We'll just let us know. Tweet us out if you want to come by, open some wax or hang out or something. Card shop is opening probably within the next couple weeks, I would say.
It's in my basement.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's in my basement. It's in Dan's bathroom.
It's not weird at all either.
Not weird at all.
Mike, come here. I got some wax in the basement. Or come here. Come down here.
So. Yeah, that should be interesting. And Lori says, doesn't Ryan T have opinions on everything?
Yes, Lori knows that. Lori knows that. The answer to that.
Did Panini force your hand on the shop? Well, they kind of pushed us a little bit, I think. I think that helped. That kind of said, oh, we got this other space. Might as well make it a shop. So I think that's what we're doing. We'll see. Shane will be in the shop probably. If you want to share your stories with Shane, Shane has a lot of stories himself. He'll be in the shop. He'll talk to you for a good amount of time.
Oh,
he will.
He'll talk to you.
He knows a lot of stuff, too. For being 20 years old, you would think this guy is 45, 55 years old. He's got stories for days. He's probably not listening, so, you know, let him talk about it. So I think that's it. Ryan, do you have anything to add in or anything, or...
No, I gotta come to your car. I gotta come visit you at your card shop. So I'm gonna let me know when it's open, and I'm gonna come by.
Okay.
Hell
we'll
yeah.
We'll have to make sure there's nobody else in there because it's a capacity of four. So we'll make sure that. I'm just joking. It's about 500 square feet. Okay, maybe on a good day. But yeah, definitely, we would love to have you come down. You gotta come down and open some boxes like we did last time you were here, dude. That was fun.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that for sure.
Yeah, and your repack product's coming out anyway. Maybe we could debut it when you come down. So
we'll tease that for next show, I guess.
There we go. We're gonna tease that Ryan's ultimate super killer super duper product, and we're gonna tease Upper Deck Panini.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a hell of a show.
It is. I can't wait.
Hell yeah!
All right. So cool. You guys, make sure you check out sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. We got breaks of NT tomorrow and pastime baseball and Court Kings baseball or basketball tomorrow. And a lot of stuff going down. And check us out on at Card Radio Live on Twitter. Make sure you follow Sergio at Sports Card Album on Twitter. And once again, the site is sportscardalbum.com. Free to use, set up, upload your photos. Pretty cool. So other than that, we are going to be out, and thank you guys for tuning in as always. Peace.
Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.